blue, God bless him. Well, wherever her soul may be, she could have searched this whole world over.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Pondheads, the podcast that goes bump in the night. I am your humble host, Janine Mercer, and I am joined here by...
me, Katie McCauley. I am back for season three, ready for it. Woo!
Yes, and back for season three on a permanent basis.
Yes, I'm here to stay. You'll permanent be hearing my voice a lot.
Yep. I just recently updated all of the iTunes information, so now your name is officially emblazoned.
Oh my goodness.
On the iTunes information.
That's yes, great. I'm very glad. Very exciting. That is good.
All right. So before we get started today, a little bit of, it's not really news. I don't think it's news. I just kind of like to give a shout out to podcasts that I'm enjoying.
Oh, yeah.
Because I feel like, you know, podcasting is very much a family endeavor.
Agreed.
Yeah. So I like to give other podcasts a little shout out when I can. So one that I've been listening to most recently is Dead Man Talking.
Ooh, that sounds good.
It is a true crime podcast. It's fantastic. The narrator really does an excellent job of relaying the information.
Mm-hmm.
And he has done, I don't want to give away too much, but he has done a lot of extensive research on the particular case that he's presenting. He's gone into the prison and he's interviewed the guy that was doing all
the
of
stuff
these
and
murders.
Things.
Yes, the stuff and the things. So yeah, I mean it's part interview and it's part like people who have been attacked and have survived. He'll interview them. So it's very interesting. Yeah, it's a very powerful podcast. And it's very well put together.
That's important.
The music is good. Yeah, it's good all the way around.
Sweet.
So yeah, Dead Man Talking, if you want to hit that up, they're on iTunes and probably anywhere you listen to podcasts. I'm sure you could get that. Do you have any that you are liking right now?
Well, I didn't think ahead. I mostly just, I listen to the Jenna and Julian podcast.
Okay.
For Jenna Mori or Jenna Marbles, she's a YouTuber. She's like one of my favorite people, vegan.
She's the one with the whippet.
The what?
The whippet dog. The
yeah.
little dog.
Yes, the little itty bitty. Yes.
What is its name?
Kermit. Kermit Marbles, Kermit. And then her boyfriend has a dog named Peach. Oh. And yeah, so I listen to them every single week. I also listen to the Mile Higher podcast a lot, which you know me and my like Bigfoot and Loch Ness Monster
right.
and aliens and stuff like that. So
sure.
That's actually a married couple, Kendall Ray and Josh. They just talk about like a bunch of conspiracy theories and weird stuff. And I'm very there for it. And
yeah.
they also cover true crime. And
oh,
it's really
yeah.
nice because they actually do research. Whereas like
yeah.
I love the Jenna and Julian one because it just makes me laugh every week.
Yeah.
And yeah, but those are the two main ones that I've been listening to. I listen to Sleep With Me, but that's just so
yeah.
then I go to sleep. It's not really for
yeah. I mean, you know, I usually I flit around between a lot of different podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have like I'm looking at my podcast feed right now and I have still pretty a Buffy podcast. That's one that I listen to.
Well, it's Buffy.
On a regular basis.
Always listen to Buffy.
Cabinet of Curiosities by Aaron Mankey. He also does Lore.
I was going to say, I know his Lore one. I can't listen to it that often, though, because it just, oh, it's so good.
And he's got another one called, I have to scroll and find it.
I also really like Real Ghost Stories Online.
Mm.
They're good. People, like, call in or write in with their ghost stories, and whew, that's one.
Yeah,
I used to.
Something.
Well, I used to listen to it when I was driving in my car places, but I had to stop.
Right.
That was not a smart decision.
Oh, here it is. Unobscured.
Ooh.
He just finished an entire season about the Salem Witch Trials.
Ooh, that would be fascinating.
And it's very much, he does a lot of interviews, in-depth interviews, and it's really well-researched, really well put together. A lot of people have been complaining because he uses the same guy for the background music for, like, everything he does.
That just makes sense, though.
So they're like, dude, can you not find somebody somebody else to play some other kind of fucking music so that we're not constantly... Because it's always this piano music in the background or strings.
Yeah, so...
And I actually find it... Yeah, I mean, I find it appropriate because of the content that he's talking about.
Yeah, you don't want to, like, have, like, some hip-hop and, like...
Yeah, no.
In the background when you're talking about something that serious.
Not so much. Another one that I've been listening to a lot is the Strange and Unusual podcast.
Ooh.
She does something similar to what we do, except it's a lot more produced.
Mm-hmm.
The only complaint that I have is sometimes it sounds like she's reading directly from a script.
Yeah, I don't like that.
But really well researched and occasionally very funny.
Humor is good.
So yeah, it's good.
Do you mostly listen to ones with one person talking or like a duo that like kind of riff off each other?
It depends on my mood.
Mm-hmm.
I have a data entry job, so like I sit there and click all day.
Yeah.
And it's really super mindless.
Oh yeah. So I've been there.
Yeah. So I just sit there and click and listen to podcasts. And so, I mean, sometimes I'm in the mood to listen to just one person relaying information. Mm-hmm. But I tend to flip-flop. Like, I enjoy true crime podcasts where, people are interviewing, you know, they're going out and they're trying to uncover.
Oh yeah, that's fascinating.
That's another awesome podcast, Uncover. That's from CBC Radio. Also, Someone Knows Something. That's also from CBC Radio.
I'll just have to sit down and compare notes.
Two amazing podcasts. They're fantastic. Finding Cleo is another one. That one is an amazing podcast. Very emotional. I bawled my fucking eyes out at work. What else? God, there's so many.
Yeah.
There's so many that are
well,
so great.
When I worked at the financial trust company, I did a lot of just transaction entry and data entry. And yes, I listened to quite a few podcasts.
Yeah.
And like, there was this one I really liked. It was about, I don't recall the name though, but it was about famous people and how they died.
Oh.
And it was really good because it was about people like who had like tragic deaths before their time.
Yeah.
And that one, I just thought of it because that one made me cry at work with Kurt Cobain. That episode. And the guy who worked in the cubicle next to me kind of just looked at me like, you all right? You all right over there? Everything okay? And I'm like,
it's sorry. I can't help it. Yeah, there's just so many amazing podcasts.
When did they just become a thing? Because I just remember them like not really listening to them, and then all of a sudden, boom, they were everywhere. And I was like,
well,
this is awesome.
I feel like, and you know, like please don't quote me on this, people listening. if anybody is actually listening, no, people are listening.
They are.
Thank you for subscribing, by the way. If you haven't subscribed to us already, please do so.
Yes.
And leave us a 5-star review. We'd really appreciate it. But yeah, it's really interesting because I feel like 5 years ago, you didn't really hear anything about podcasts or podcasting. And now it seems like it's exploded, but it's also getting picked up by newspapers.
Really?
So, like, the New York Times is doing a podcast.
Oh, yeah.
The Boston Globe has one of their journalists doing a podcast and doing a side investigation that he's reporting on in podcast form.
Mm-hmm.
And I really think that we're kind of, it harkens back to the days of radio when little kids would sidle up to the radio and listen to, like, you know, the cowboy and Indian shows or like Little Orphan Annie or what, you know, like I really feel like we're kind of going, it's almost like we're going back in time a little bit. We have new equipment. You know, things
and
are functioning.
More accessible.
Yeah. It's a lot more accessible. I mean, really all podcasters have to do nowadays to be called a podcaster is buy a computer that you can podcast on that will support it. And a microphone.
Pretty much. Yeah, I actually...
And then you're done.
one of my podcasts is the New York Times one, The Daily.
I
don't listen to it all the time, though, because I get really sad. Because the world is so messed up. But I agree. I think it...
Yeah.
It's just a really nice and... One thing that I've heard people say that I agree with is it's nice when you're doing something by yourself to make you not feel like you're by yourself.
Right.
And feel like there's other people around you.
Yeah.
Which I totally agree with, especially like during commutes and stuff too.
It's pretty nice. Yeah. It's pretty interesting actually that, you know, this whole podcasting thing has brought so many people together. Every time I tweet on Twitter, I always tag Potter and Family. Because that's like the group, you know, and everybody, you know, will follow that particular hashtag and whatever. And, you know, we can connect that way. And a lot of different podcasts have followed us on Twitter. And, you know, we connect and we send, you know, shout outs back and forth. We'll give shout outs on our podcast. So,
which is awesome.
It's it's pretty cool that you can build a community by sitting in a room often by yourself.
Talking
into a microphone. Yes. Yeah, it's very interesting.
Because before there was a microphone involved, that was frowned upon.
Well, you know, I mean, yeah, there might be a padded room involved and a man with a key. But now...
Yeah.
No, actually, when I first started podcasting, there was a podcaster I was talking to, and I forget who he was, but he had a relatively popular podcast. And he told me that he outfitted a closet with a chair and a table and a microphone, and he lined the closet with foam.
That would not work for me.
And this is where he podcasts. So he literally, he goes into the closet, he closes the door, and he records his podcast. And I was like, wow, you know, we have some walk-in closets in our house. Like, I could totally... You totally do that.
You do. You have, like, not a lot of space.
We have some... Yeah, I mean, you know, like, that's a decent-sized closet, but it's full of shit that will inevitably explode outward if I open that door, so the door is going to stay closed. But, yeah, I mean, there's, you know, in the spare bedroom in the back of the house, there's a huge closet. There's one in the bedroom. Like, you know, it would be easy to just stick foam all over the inside of the closet and fucking lock myself in there.
Yeah, I don't think that would do good if you ever had a guest on, though. Like, here, step into my closet.
Yeah.
The walls are covered in foam.
Well, the cool thing about having guests on your podcast, too, is you can have them on via Skype.
Oh, true.
So they don't ever have to come to where you're podcasting. So for all they know, you're sitting in this fancy-ass studio.
Yeah.
Like we do. Sit in this fancy-ass studio.
It is luxurious here.
I mean, there's big leather high-back chairs and...
Like faux fur throws.
Oh, I mean, it's just very luxurious. Mm-hmm. Yes.
But there is tea, for real.
There is actual real tea.
I'm considering making us a Instagram.
Oh, so yes.
I haven't quite figured out what I want to call it yet, but I'll keep you guys all updated, and as soon as it becomes a thing, we'll make sure to put it on Facebook and Twitter so you can find us there, because I'm not so much in, like, the tweeting world of things, but, like, I'm on Instagram all the time.
All the time.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, that would be super nice, too, if you were, like, out somewhere and you happened to see something that was cool or creepy or whatever.
Yeah.
And you could just be like, boop, there
Definitely.
You go.
Definitely, yeah. And we could even take, like, a picture of us in our luxurious...
In our luxurious studio?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we could take some pictures of the dead things. I feel like I've been saying ever since this podcast started...
Yeah.
...that I'm going to take pictures of the taxidermy and shit like that and post it. And I don't think I ever have.
Yeah, well, that'd be a good Instagram thing.
So there's probably some people out there like, fuckers always say that they're gonna do it and they never do it. Well, maybe we'll do it now.
Well, I love taking pictures of stuff, so maybe we could do like a stuffed animal of the month or something. There's enough we could get through a year at least, I think.
Yeah, you could totally get through a year. There's...
Well, there's also on the floor behind you. Like, I mean, it's not really stuffed, but it's in a jar.
Oh, yeah, so you can do the jarred...
Yeah.
The jarred stuff, too. Yeah. No, we would totally have enough weird or creepy shit for a month. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's about it for my news, other than I'm excited to be permanently part of the team.
Part of the Haunheads crew?
Yes.
And at some point, too, guys, we're going to kind of look at our branding and see where we are. We might wind up changing the overall aesthetic of the header that you see on Facebook and Twitter, the logos. We also might consider next season changing the name of the podcast.
Yeah.
To kind of better reflect what it is we're talking about, because, you know,
it's not just haunting.
Yeah, things. No, we don't just talk about haunted shit, and we've never just talked about haunted shit.
Yeah.
I think that when we named it Haunt Heads, we were just kind of going for spooky.
Yeah.
And it sounds more like it should be a Halloween podcast about you know, going to haunted houses. So we want to. We want to make sure that we're on brand.
Yeah. So if you guys have any suggestions, like, just, like, tweet us.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Hit us up on Facebook if you have any, like, name suggestions or
hit
whatever.
Us up on Facebook. Hit us up on Twitter.
On our hypothetical future Instagram.
Yeah. On Twitter, we are at HauntHeadsCast. On Facebook, we're HauntHeads Podcast. If you would like to email us, we are... HauntHeadsCast@gmail.com. So, yeah. I don't know why I always stumble with that. I'm always like, wait, what is the email? And then I have
it's very difficult to remember.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. We have so many incarnations that I'm like, what the fuck? Okay.
Okay.
All right, so I think we're ready to get started.
Okay, so who's going to go first?
Oh, Jesus, I don't know.
How will we decide? Do you want us to go?
Well, what... What do you... mine is pretty grotesque.
Oh, so maybe we should start... Because mine...
So maybe start light and then grotesque?
Yeah, because mine's not that grotesque. Mine's pretty... it's interesting, but... Okay. Okay, so we can start with mine, and I made it... I considered calling it something else, but I wanted... Okay, let's go for it. Well, if I say what I was gonna call it, that gives it away. So
yes.
Okay, yeah. So it is about secondhand items and the energy they hold. Dun dun dun. Because I was gonna call it like haunted items, but that's actually not true of a lot of it. Because like specifically something being haunted, that has very specific connotations, which I'll get to,
right.
As opposed to just... the overarching theme of how when you buy something that someone else owned, sometimes shit gets weird, basically.
Yeah, sometimes there's an energy attached to it that you can kind of, you know, it's palpable. That's the collection of...
Oh.
Yeah, yes. So recently we went on a trip to Goodwill.
The best store.
The best store in the world. And... I found a rather large collection of old Avon cologne decanters from, like, the 70s. And I thought that they were so cool that I had to buy all of them. And they were, like, I think, like, on average, like, $3 each.
That's not bad. They're nice. I'll definitely cleanse them.
They're really, yeah, I mean, they're really cute. There's, like, some that are shaped like little pipes, and, like, there's a moose. And there's a couple of fish ones.
One kind of looks like an Aladdin genie bottle.
Yeah,
thingy.
A little bit. There's a couple there that are really super pretty.
Yeah, they should hold like an elixir of life or something.
Yeah, yeah. And then there's like a couple of cars that on the back they have little plastic tires that you unscrew and that's how you open it. Yeah, so they're.
My grandma
they're
was an
neat.
Avon lady, so I actually recognize a couple of them.
Yeah.
From her time there, but yeah, so. As soon as you told me about that, I was like, "Well, did you cleanse their energy?" And you're like, "I washed them." So
I did wash them.
Yes. But. So I will definitely take care of that for you, just because it will be good.
Sounds good.
Anyhow, so secondhand items and the energy they hold.
Cool.
So we're going to come at this from actually several different viewpoints. I found an amazing article, actually, about, it was from Collectors Weekly, and it was just called, Could Your Stuff Be Haunted?
I do like Collectors Weekly.
Yeah, they
have... As a collector of random shit.
And they're just, like, very well-researched mm-hmm. and
yeah.
really good. And I really liked this article because it went at it from multiple different points of view that we'll go yeah. over. So we're just going to start with a basic premise today, okay. which is that items bought secondhand can give a person an uneasy feeling, mm-hmm. bad dreams, or other negative or just strange reactions.
Okay.
Like, when you buy something that someone else had, sometimes it feels weird. And yeah. it doesn't feel like it belongs to you.
Right.
Quite. Or you'll just, yeah, it can be just a strange experience. Mm-hmm. So, in the article, and in general, there's basically three schools of thought, we'll call them.
Okay.
The first one... It's just, it's your brain. And it has nothing right. whatsoever to do with the actual item.
So it's kind of like it's if you walk sex. Into, yeah, like you walk into a place that's supposedly haunted. And you're predisposed to think that it's haunted. Yes. So, of course, it's haunted. Yeah.
Well, scientific researchers, like, have actually found that if they, like, they stimulate a specific part of your brain, they can create the experience of sensing a ghost.
Uh-huh.
Like, the feeling of a chill up your spine. And, like, what's the other thing? They can create a sensed presence in the room, like, beyond mm-hmm. yourself, as yeah. well as a feeling of oneness with the universe or an out-of-body experience. Because science has shown that it's something that can be created by the brain, a lot yeah. of people think that all of the instances of it were created by the human brain.
Right.
And that you can't predict or recreate it. And therefore, it is not, like, scientifically valid. The second school of thought...
Just yeah.
The second school of thought is that it's energy. It's not okay. so much like a being or paranormal. It's just that you have energy. And when you have something, you're passing your energy onto that item.
Right.
And items can collect and hold that energy. Sylvia Brown, who is like a famous like psychic and mm-hmm. stuff, this is kind of what she said. She had a really good quote that I'm going to directly take from that article, which is that it's not haunted, it's negative energy. Everything has energy. There are no ghosts attached to anything, but I don't ever doubt that there's energy attached to something. Energy can be very strong. You can even buy new things like a purse that you carry around a couple weeks and mm-hmm. people bring them back and say, I don't want it because it makes them feel weird.
Right.
So that mm-hmm. is like the second thing, that it's not a positive or a like it's just the energy around it. And sometimes mm-hmm. that like can boogie with like your grooves yeah. and other times mm-hmm. it doesn't and it makes you feel weird and you're like, I don't want it. And you just want to get rid of it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like I got a package from, my grandparents pretty recently
mm-hmm.
with a bunch of old family photos
yeah.
in there. And I didn't know what it was when I saw it on the porch,
mm-hmm.
but I knew what it was when I picked it up.
Yeah.
And it was very strange because it was turned over, so I couldn't see the label. I couldn't see who it was from. I wasn't expecting it. I wasn't expecting it at that point in time anyway. My grandfather had mentioned that he was going to start putting some stuff together, but I think he wanted to send it early to surprise me because it was before Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't been home for a Christmas since 2006. So that part of our relationship is a little strained.
Yeah.
So I'm sure that he wanted to send photos of the family so that I would have them with yeah. me for Christmas.
Yeah.
Which was very sweet.
That is. That's really nice.
So I literally walked up to the package and I was like, oh, what's this? And I picked it up and I was like, oh, I know what this is.
Yeah.
And I brought it inside and then immediately started to cry when I was, like, going through the pictures. Because there's yeah. pictures of people who are deceased. And
yeah.
whatever. Like, my great-grandnan is in there, who I loved and made, like, the most amazing raisin tarts ever.
Ooh.
Was such an amazing baker. She made the best cups of orange pekoe tea to go with said tarts.
That just sounds great. Now I want both of those
yeah,
things.
Yeah, she was definitely a member of the plastic-covered couch crowd. Yes. And her couch, was like lime, or not lime green, but like pea green.
Ooh.
You know, and it was fuzzy.
Oh.
Yeah.
It was fuzzy and covered in plastic.
Yeah, it was velour.
That would be uncomfortable for my brain to comprehend.
But yeah, it was like Queen Anne style with the claws. And it was, my grandfather had, he's an upholsterer, so he had recovered it for her in that fabric that she had specifically requested.
The things you do for the people you love.
You know, honest to God.
I feel like most people have had an experience where they've touched something and it has evoked a specific feeling.
Mm-hmm.
I just feel that, especially when you have something that has been someone else's, that can just increase, like family photos that like a lot of people have had and they've like touched and put their energy into, that can just remain. I do think also that a lot of that can be psychological as well, because you have certain expectations like surrounding a specific item, so that can bring out a specific feeling in you when you physically touch it, because that also makes whatever the item is real. Because if you're looking at something, it's not as real as if you're reaching out and touching it. That touch adds an element of, oh, this is actually happening, this is truly here, etc.
Right.
So that's kind of the second school of thought, which, spoiler alert, is the one that I more believe and fall under the heading of.
Right.
But the third is that it's para-freaking normal. Like, it completely is paranormal. So there's a paranormal investigator in Washington State named Karen Frazier, and she kind of has a good argument for, well, to her, like for this side of things. But also, which I think is very important, is that the article, and in general, it's important to the difference between a haunting, a ghost, and something that just has energy like attached to it.
Right.
Because like a haunting is basically, you could think of it like a recording.
Right.
Like it's on a loop. It's happening over and over again. It's the same type of thing. So ghost is like a specific entity type things. Whereas energy can just be you touch something and you can see flashes and images of the last person, like, that held it, like, what they were going through. I've had that happen. Like, I picked up a cigar box once, and I perfectly, like, when I looked at it, I had this flash where my hands weren't my hands. They were the hands of this, like, old man, which, and I just saw, like, it being lifted and a cigar taking out and then it being shut again. And, like, I can perfectly describe even, like, the clasp ring that he had on his finger. But, and it wasn't so much, like, that they were my hands, but I just was transported to, like, remembering that for instance. But that's not really a haunting or a ghost or anything. It's just a paranormal flash. So,
so something else that I kind of want to make a point on, too, is in terms of hauntings, there are two kinds of hauntings. So there's the intelligent form of haunting.
Oh, yes, definitely. That's important.
The entity is aware that you are there. The entity is reacting, interacting with you. And then there's the residual form of haunting.
Very important.
Which is essentially, just being on a loop. It's like a recording. There used to be a door there, and now this entity is doing this, you know, just going around, opening this door, walking through it. But it's a wall now. You know, so two different kinds of hauntings.
That is very important. Thank you. That is very important to differentiate. Basically, under that one, there's three main ideas, which is that sometimes if something is used for like a ritual or a specific intent, that remains with it. And that follows through it. So like if you find this cup, and you're like, oh my gosh, this is the coolest freaking cup. But someone in the past, like, used it as, like, a chalice, like, to drink sacred wine or something from. That energy could follow along with it, even though it's not currently being used as that item. It could just have been so imbued with that purpose that it's just remaining and influencing around it that type of just energy. And the... Yeah.
Okay.
you look like you might be a bit skeptical of that one.
That's, well, I don't know. I mean, I'm not the type of person that picks things up and is like, oh, yeah, you know, I can sense whatever in this. Mm-hmm. Like, I pick it up and I think, hey, that's really cool. I'm going to put it in my office. And then I put it in my office. Like, you know, the guy that I was selling the African art for
mm-hmm.
was like, I want to give you a little bonus. Here's this little figure from the Cameroon. You know, it's a terracotta. It's an offering figure. And, you know, she stands there with her hands out.
Mm-hmm.
And I always try to keep something in her hands, like some coins or something, because yeah. I want to keep her appeased.
Yes.
But
isn't she in here?
Yeah, she is. She's right behind you.
Ah, yes.
But yeah, I mean, it's just like, it was something that was given to me. I saw it. I really liked it.
Mm-hmm.
Would I have more pieces of it? No, probably not, because it doesn't necessarily fit with
yeah.
everything else that I have, but no, I don't ever get like a weird, I don't ever get like a real weird energy from it. The only thing that I got a real weird energy from was that book.
That book did have a very
And I don't
distinct...
remember where it went.
Oh, that's not good.
oh, it's right there. Okay.
Oh,
yeah, like the first time that I touched it, I was like, wow, that's a really weird energy.
Mm-hmm.
Or like the first time that I picked up that package, I knew yeah. that it was from my grandfather. But the things that I find at like Goodwill or like flea markets,
yeah.
I get nothing.
See, and that's actually, I have that in here, just that sometimes it's just, it depends on the person rather than the item. Mm. Like the item might have an energy that's completely fine with everyone, but there's just one specific person where they just,
right.
they don't jive. They're mm-hmm. not boogieing to the same tango.
Right.
Like it's just not gonna work. Mm. Whereas for me, I get pick up a lot of impressions of things. Like I touch them, I'm like, ooh, no, or or like, hey, that's really nice.
Mm.
I really like when I go to Goodwill and I pick up like a cup or something and I can get the impression that it was like someone's favorite cup mm. and they used it for like their cup of coffee every single morning and like mm-hmm. they washed it like by hand.
Right.
That can be like a really positive
mm.
experience. But also mm-hmm. I wouldn't want to take their cup because it wouldn't be my favorite cup. So I
right.
kind of leave it there for either someone who can't tell that it was someone's favorite cup or
right.
someone who's like, this will now be my favorite cup. And together we shall rule the galaxy. But
well, I mean, like, I remember the first time that you came into this room and I said, you know, this is Rancid, my taxidermied raccoon.
Mm-hmm.
Feel him, he's so soft. And you were like, I don't really get good energy from
yeah.
Rancid, so I'm not going to do that. And I was just kind of like, oh, I don't get any energy at all from him. Like, I found him at fucking Maxwell Street Days, and the guy gave him to me for, like, $32, and I thought he was fucking awesome. So I walked out with a fucking taxidermied raccoon underneath my arm, and everybody was like, oh my god, look at, oh my god, and
yeah.
like, freaking out. But I got nothing.
Yeah, which I think it's also nice, though, because it's good that there is both sides to that, because I think those possessions that have a very specific energy deserve to, like, be owned by someone.
Mm-hmm.
That just sounds, the connotations are weird, but like
it
should be cared for in some
right.
way. So mm-hmm. it's nice that like you can just be like, hey, I think that's cool. And sometimes though that can just be your energy reacting to the energy of the item, just like, ah, you're cool,
right.
I want you. And then that
mm-hmm.
can just be where it ends.
Mm.
But yes, mm. so that's like the first thought, which is just that something being used for a specific purpose will maintain the properties throughout the thing. Like as a Wiccan, that's
mm.
huge.
Right.
In that, like if you're using something in like ritual work or in the realm of magic with a CK.
Yes.
Magic.
Right.
Uh-huh.
not like pulling a rabbit out of a hat.
No.
Yeah,
like,
no, not so much.
No, not that. But if you're using something for that, you should not then, like, if you're using, like, I have a chalice, actually, that
right.
I, on the different solstices,
mm.
I fill it with whatever beverage I'm drinking.
Mm.
Like, remember Yule? You came over, you were at my house for Yule. And we had We had
I don't remember what you were drinking out of, though. I guess I'm not that
observant. No. Like, I'm like, the wassail. Oh, so I just kept some of the wassail aside, and after everyone had gone, I put it in my chalice on my altar.
Oh, okay.
I see. But I would never just drink grape juice or something out of that cup. Like, yeah. It has a specific purpose. Mm-hmm. So, for me, that makes sense.
Right.
But also, sometimes what can happen is that a traumatic event can happen, and what is, like, either being used in that event or is around can just grab onto that energy. So it could have nothing to do with, like, a penny. The penny could just have been in the pocket of someone who is, like, beat up or something, and then the penny just has bad energy, but it's not the penny's fault. But that's, like, another way of looking at it. And that tends to be kind of what, in my experience with items, leads to more negative, obviously, like, if something horrible happened, like, you can touch something and be like, no, and then you just want to back away.
Right.
But
so, I mean, what, like, when you walk into a place like Goodwill, I mean, a lot of the things that are at Goodwill are there because
someone died.
Their owners have passed away.
Yes.
And their family is like, we don't want all this shit. Give it to Goodwill.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it just must be like sensory overload for you.
Well, it's...
Or for people who are more empathic or more sensitive.
Well, for me, it's more by touching it rather than walking in. Because when I walk in, I can kind of turn the volume down. Like, it's a radio. Like, I can't turn the radio off.
Right.
But I can just turn the volume down. It's just when I touch something, that's when I really feel it. But some things give off such a strong energy that I'm like, I'm not going to touch you. I'm definitely not going to. I am going to walk away. And sometimes, there's been a couple of times where there's been an item that I've actually, like, and I don't know how weird this will sound, but I've asked its permission. Like, can I pick you up and touch you? Just because I'm just not sure, and I want to be respectful of its energy, which I know sounds a little loco, but
for people who don't have that experience, it probably does, but...
But it's much better, like, trust me, you only pick up something that doesn't want to be picked up once, and then you learn not to do that ever again.
Right.
Literally, I picked something up, and it was like, put me down, and I was like, okay.
Sorry.
Yeah. Just, you're down now. Okay. Be happy. But yeah, so it's more just by touch.
Okay.
But yeah, then the other thought is just that it's just basically similar to the second complete school of thought, which is just that as something is owned, it just holds on to the energy of its owner. And then that particular person's essence travels along with it as it goes on. So that's kind of, to me, like, part of, like, the favorite cup. Like, that person. Or, like, the cigar box, you know? Like, that person. Their specific visual and that energy stuck with, like, the item that I was touching. So, then, those are just basically what the schools of thought are. And I think that all of them have some validity. I definitely think a lot of it can be psychological and come from the brain. Well, my degree is, as we've said, in psychology. So I think that that's a very big part of every experience that we have. It's just our past experiences and how our brains react to things will, like, impact how we are interacting with a specific item. So I think that's really valid. I also think that, for me, a lot of it, well, just because I've had the experiences of touching stuff and feeling certain things, to me, that's why the energy one really resonates. And I've only touched a couple things that had, like, a creepy or just paranormal vibe, which actually...
I should take you with me to the fucking Goodwill, because I would, like, totally bring shit like that home.
Yes. That would be good. what works for me, too, and I don't know why, but it does, is if you take a picture of an item and send me the picture, I can't be like, this was owned by a 76-year-old man and he had a handlebar mustache. But I can be like, good or bad.
Right.
Like, the energy around an item. Actually, okay. Yeah. So if you're looking at something and you're like, this really resonates with me, I want to buy it with my money, then just take a picture of it and send it and be like, hey, man. And if I'm like, no, and like, I'd like, delete the picture from your phone, pretend it was never there, then maybe don't buy it. Or if you do buy it, keep it in your basement when I come to visit and tell me it's down there, and I'll stay away. Yeah. Mm. But yeah, for example, one time I was at Goodwill and I picked up this bowl and it had a little lid and it was just so weird. It had cranes on the outside of it and the lid was taped onto it.
Yeah.
And I picked it up and I went to set it down, but my hands wouldn't set it down. I was just holding it and I was like, I should put this down now so I can go on. And my hands were just continued to be holding it. So it's like, or I'll buy it, because apparently that's what should happen. But then when I bought it, I just felt really uneasy. And then when I, like, took the tape off and lifted the lid, I closed it, and I was like, nope, no, 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 no. And I, like, tied it up in a bag really, really, like, tight. And then I put that bag in another bag. And then when I got home, I actually just threw it away. Because it didn't have, like, a malevolent vibe. It just had a, this is gonna mess with me. This is gonna fuck with my brain vibe. And I thought I was crazy, so I have another friend, Michaela, who has similar, like, empathic tendencies.
Sure.
And so I sent her a picture of it, and she's like, get rid of that. Put that thing back where it came from, or so help me. So it was nice to, because I didn't tell her anything about it, because I'll send her pictures of stuff, and she'll send me pictures of stuff, and we won't say, oh, we got a great vibe from this, or oh, we got a horrible one. Right. We'll just send it, and then, like, let them decide.
Yeah.
Like, how does this make you feel? But, yeah, I just, oh, also, when I'm talking about my thoughts is don't ever, 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 ever buy a secondhand mirror. I remember telling you this. Just don't do it. Don't do it.
Yeah.
Mirrors capture images and lives of people, and just don't buy one secondhand. Just don't do it.
I mean, even, like, don't the really cool...
Do it.
Mercury glass.
Don't do it. Or
but they're so pretty. Sorry.
No.
Go ahead.
Just don't. just mirrors. I don't like them. I have like the minimum.
I mean, there's a mirror in that curio cabinet. That's not my curio cabinet.
That's different than like a mirror that was like hanging in someone's bedroom that like they were living in front of all the time, and it's also behind things. It's not like a giant antique mirror that you have just like, oh gosh, I'm not a fan of mirrors. Well, they've seen a lot of shit.
Well, and I guess if, you know, a mirror is coming from a dead person's house, then they probably saw said dead person, and then you now have a mirror that has seen a dead person, and yeah, I guess I get it.
Yeah, well, and in a lot of cultures, actually, they cover mirrors when someone passes away so that their soul doesn't get stuck in it. So, just my thoughts and Katie McCauley's rule of thumb, don't buy a mirror secondhand. And if you do, cleanse it, and then cleanse it again. And then when you're thinking, huh, it's pretty cleansed, do it again. And probably one more time. And then take a picture of it and send it to me. And I'll tell you if it worked or not. But just, so I also wanted just to touch on two things I thought were really cool, which were famous haunted, and I put that in parentheses, quotations, famous haunted items.
Right.
The first one was just Robert the Doll.
Oh, Robert the Doll.
Yeah. Have you seen that?
Ask for permission before you take his picture.
Yeah. I did not, because sometimes, you know, I'll put like the pictures in my notes that I have here, and then I'll show you. Yeah, I didn't. I didn't do that.
Mm-mm.
I didn't know. But yes, Robert the Doll was given to Key West painter and author Robert Eugene Otto in 1906 and now lives in a glass box in the Fort East Martello Museum. So apparently this doll was jinxed by a servant who was skilled at voodoo.
Yep.
And, like, it spoke with kids, giggled, and knocked down furniture, and launched murderous attacks against its owners, and it's just bad to take a picture without permission.
Supposedly. Yeah. All of those things happen.
Yes. And I have not researched super into it. I was just, it was put down as being haunted. But then, going back to the it's your brain, type thing, someone did have a counterpoint, which is that, like, if you have something that's human looking, people tend to imbue it with human properties.
Right.
And that's just, like, a very common thing to do.
Well, and also dolls, creepy.
Dolls are creepy. I mean... Yeah, they're creepy-ass motherfuckers.
And Robert the doll has got to be one of the creepiest fucking dolls I've ever seen.
Oh my god, yeah.
With his weird little rubber pockmarked face.
Yeah, no.
And his little dead black eyes.
Yeah,
not so much.
No. I don't know why anyone would want to take a picture
that
of him.
That doesn't convince me to keep more dolls or anything. Yeah. Buy a doll, no. That makes me want to kill it with fire.
The second thing was Thomas Busby's chair, which then I was talking to you and you said Mimi actually talked about before, which is just a chair in England that once belonged to a man named Thomas Busby, who was hanged for murder. He's believed to have cursed the chair as he was dragged off to the gallows, that anyone who sits in it dies shortly thereafter.
And a lot of people apparently have died from sitting in it. So now it's
hanging from
nailed to the ceiling. Yeah.
Yes, so no one can sit on it ever again. And that's why I included that. I was like, that is...
Yeah.
A lot of times people's instinct is just to, like, completely get rid of it. Get rid of it, get rid of it, get rid of it. But I thought that was a nice way to nullify it.
Yep.
Without angering anything that might be attached to it.
It's like, well, now only somebody who is 12 and a half feet tall can sit in the chair.
Yes, Slender Man could sit in the chair if he wanted.
And we're done.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So then, to end, I just wanted to kind of go over how to deal with secondhand items. Because I was like, I don't want to just tell you about this and then possibly freak you out a little bit. Or make you be like, are you taking all your medication? And then not give you any follow-up.
Well, there might be somebody out there that has a house full of this shit that they just picked up at the Goodwill, and they're like, well, what the fuck do I do now?
Yes, you burn your house to the ground and move.
Don't be like every ghost investigation show ever and be like, so you have ghosts, bye.
Well, also, I just think a lot of times people will react too strongly.
Yes.
Where they'll just pay a bunch of money for someone to come and, like, bless and cleanse it. And it's like...
Yeah. There's a lot of people that are charlatans that are going to take advantage.
See, I, like, cleanse things for people and, like, homes, and I've done apartments and stuff like that. But I don't do it for, like, money. I just do it because you're my friend and I want you to be safe.
Sure.
And you got some weird energy and some janky shit going on up in here that I don't like. And if I have to be here, that ain't going to be here.
Well, the energy in here must be okay.
It is. Yeah. Yes, it definitely is. Otherwise, when you asked me to join the podcast, I might have been like, where are some other rooms? Where's that closet?
Where's that closet? That closet sounds awesome.
Yes. Okay, so there are some proactive things you can do, like before experiencing any of the negative emotions. Also, I should probably go over like signs that something might be hinky.
Sure.
Like, not all as well in the state of Denmark, which is, who knows why I say what I say most of the time, but, so something could have a very negative energy if, when you get it, you get, like, a chill, or after you've gotten something, you find that you're consistently in a bad mood, but you weren't before, and when you're away from whatever item it may be, it's less or goes away. Or you have, like, bad dreams. Those are all signs of that. And just, like, if it keeps on moving, that's a really bad sign. And that's not something that is to be concerned about, unless you have someone who lives with you that has a really, really fucked up sense of humor. And is doing that on purpose. But, yeah, so those are signs. But there's some really simple things that you can do. First is... touch stuff before you buy it, if you're getting it secondhand.
Yep.
I'm not a huge fan of buying secondhand items online, just because you don't know all of the energy that is attached to it. So if possible, just like touch it before you buy it. And if you get a bad vibe, shimmy shake away. Just cha-cha real smooth the fuck away.
Yep.
I'm gonna go now. Like that psychic I mentioned earlier, Sylvia Brown, she said that she knew a woman who bought an antique ring, and when she put it on, she got sick. She was sick until she took it off. And I was like, that's like definitely jewelry, because that's something that's so personal. Like, it was on another person.
Yep.
It was like all up in their energy.
Well, this ring that I have on, I got it from a police auction.
Yeah, but
I didn't buy it new.
Yeah, it doesn't have a bad energy at all. It has
a
nice one.
I don't think it doesn't.
Well, I feel like your energy is probably engulfed whatever came before.
Oh, probably.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, so touch it before you buy it.
Mm-hmm.
And another thing to do is to take a picture of it and look at the picture, not the item. Because sometimes the actual item might not give you anything, but you'll look at the picture and you'll get just like this bad feeling of like, nah. You know, like when you look at a picture of Robert the doll, you're like, nah, just it's
not
weird.
So, much.
So right. Or take a picture of it and like send it to someone else if you get like a slightly weird vibe, but you're like, is my brain just being weird? Then
right.
That's a good way to work around that. And then when you buy something secondhand, just cleanse it. It's simple. It's so simple. I will be doing it to your lovely Avon bottles. And I do it whenever I buy anything. Like, I literally have bought, I don't know, a freaking cutting board. I don't think I've ever bought a cutting board secondhand, actually. That'd be kind of weird.
Yeah,
unless it was a wooden one. Because those... But, like, I bought chairs secondhand and I cleansed them. Just everything that I purchased secondhand, like mixing bowls, I cleanse them. Just do that. So there's a couple ways you can cleanse an item.
Okay.
The cheapest one, and, well, that I know of, is salt. Salt sucks out negative energy. However, salt can be abrasive. So if it's something, like, really delicate, or, like, fine china or something, you might not want to, like, dunk it in a bunch of salt and leave it there overnight. But that's a really simple way to cleanse an item. It's not the one that I use the most often because I have other, like, the other things to use.
Mm.
But salt is really simple. If something gives you a bad vibe and you just shove it in a bowl of salt and you, like, stick it, especially if you stick it in a window, like, where the moon can shine on it and the sun, like, too, and you just leave it there for, like, a day, that can really help with, and, actually, if you wear, like, a piece of jewelry all the time, I highly recommend just cleansing it every now and again anyway, just to, release some of that pent-up energy. And then just throw the salt in the garbage when you're done. Don't, like, sprinkle it on your food or something.
Right.
Don't eat that salt.
Yeah.
But then the other way is by using smoke. Mm-hmm. So either sage or Palo Santo.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the difference between the two is that sage does a completely blank slate. It gets rid of all the energy attached to the item, both positive and negative.
Okay.
Whereas Palo Santo removes only the negative energy. So any, like, good juju that might be around it would remain.
Okay.
Whereas sage just gets rid of everything. However, it's important to note, as a me, that sage and, well, white sage and Palo Santo are heavily over-harvested. So try and ethically source them if that's what you use, because they're a depleting resource otherwise, if you don't get them from a reputable source.
Right.
Also, you don't know if they're, like, legit.
Mm.
So I mostly, for secondhand things, I do mostly go for sage, because I just want all of the energy gone. I don't want the other person's anything,
right,
like, hanging around. Unless it's very strongly, like, attachments really positive, then maybe I wouldn't. But I've always tended to use sage. And then all you have to do is then use incense to kind of give it, like imbue it with a specific energy after you're done cleansing it.
Sure.
So I found the perfect way to, like, mess with the system, which is I use white sage incense.
Oh.
So, like, then you're cleansing it, removing all of it, and you're also imbuing it with the positive incense energy, and
right.
you're not using up, like, because that just has the essential oils of white sage in it, which, and I get it, like, ethically, so it's not sourced negatively. So I just use white sage incense, which is what I'll bring over for your stuff. And also, if you can't use salt, but you're like, I don't have time to go out and get, like, sage and Palo Santo, you can just use water a lot of times if it's running. Like, running water. Which can mean even just your sink, like, running, as long as it's not, like you have the drain open and it's running down and through.
Mm.
So, if you can't use water, you can probably use salt. And if you can't use either, use smoke.
Cool.
So, Then, for closing, just if you've gotten something and it has a bad vibe, now what do you do, like, reactively? Mm-hmm. Like, you've gotten the creepy vibes, you're having bad dreams, it's making you angry or upset or depressed. There's some things that you can do. The simplest one is just to cleanse it at that time and see if that gets rid of it. Then you can toss it, like throw it out. However, a lot of times people will choose to sell it instead. But if it's a very positive, like powerful negative energy, make sure you're selling it and letting people know, this weirded me out and that's why I'm selling it. For example, I got this set of books for Christmas from someone and they just had real bad juju for me. But I knew that it was just for me and it was just because of who they came from to me.
Sure.
So I sold them to my friend saying, these had really bad juju when they belonged to me. Do you want them? And then they're like, yeah, sure. And then they gave me $40. I gave them a 7-book series. Everyone was happy. Mm. And then the energy, and I checked to make sure, like, yes, the energy was completely fine. It was just specific to me.
Right.
And you can also find someone else to deal with it who is more, like, empathic or might know more intuitively how to best deal with it. And as a last resort, you could bury it or burn it. But that should just be done as a last resort, and you shouldn't just, like, be your go-to. Also, you just get, like, a lot of your stuff would just be gone then, like, if you're having, like, this, and just like, oh, you know what, I'll just burn it.
And, I'll just bury it.
Well,
there you go.
Also, don't bury things that are bad for the environment.
So, oh, no. Yes. Yeah.
And, finally, if it's something really, really old, you can try and return it from wherever it came from. Because sometimes things are just mad, like, I'm not where I'm supposed to be.
Right.
And if you put them back where they're supposed to be, then they're happy again.
Hmm.
So, okay. My caution about burning it is that if there is a negative energy around it, it could transfer away from the item than to being attached to, like, something else or to you. Hmm. So if you're going to go that route, it's best to involve someone who knows what they're doing. Or just say fuck it and throw it on your bonfire and spray it with kerosene.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so that's what I had for
cool. Today. Yeah, yeah, it's pretty interesting how much stuff there is out there that has negative energy attached to it. Particularly things that you might find at a thrift store or an antique mall.
Yeah, or museums. I love going to museums, but that's also nice, though, because you're not touching it.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Honestly, one of the things I like most at museums is paintings, because the energy of the artist can get really wrapped up in it, and it can just be the most impactful feeling.
Yeah. The one thing that I do get a really weird vibe from, and it's probably just because it's weird and it creeps me out, but at the Milwaukee Art Museum, the janitor installation, he gets me every time.
Yeah, he's creepy.
He's very creepy. Yeah. If you guys have never been to the Milwaukee Art Museum, you should absolutely go and check out the janitor. It's literally a statue that stands near a corner with, is he holding a mop or a bucket or...
I haven't been there since freshman year of college, so I vaguely...
He's holding some sort of cleaning implement, and if you're not paying attention, you totally just think that it's a janitor mopping up something on the floor.
Yeah.
But it is an installation made by an artist, and it is a piece of art that somebody is displaying. But if you just walk by and didn't give it a second thought, you would just think that something spilled on the floor and the janitor came to clean it up.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is cool.
I agree. I think it's very impactful.
It's very interesting. But at the same time, because I know he's there, and I know that he's not real, there's just something... I think it's the same thing with the doll.
Dolls, things that mimic the human shape...
Yeah.
...are inherently more creepy than things that don't mimic the human shape. They just inherently have another added thing of, well, because it's like part of, like, you have this dreadful fascination, like, is it gonna move? like in the back part of your brain. I think it's evolutionary. Like we're programmed to sense and note potential predators in our environment. Right. So when you see something, yep. And it's not reacting in the way that you would assume a predator would, your brain's like, I don't like it, because then it can't assess potential threats and respond appropriately.
Sure. Yeah, makes sense.
Yep. So there you go. That's my first episode. Part of season 3.
Nice.
For you.
So, this week I said that my piece was a little grotesque.
Yes.
If you are squeamish, if you are not a fan of animal cruelty, if you are not a fan of infanticide...
Shit, son! what are you maybe... telling me about?
Well, okay, so this week I decided to do something that falls into the weird and wonderful category. I wanted to talk about Terrar, mm-hmm. who is the 17th century glutton that ate everything under the sun and was a sideshow performer for a while. So yeah, he's pretty interesting. He led a very interesting life. So I titled this piece... The fork was never found.
I'm intrigued.
We'll just put that out there. So, likely one of the strangest figures in history was a man known only as Terrar. He was a glutton, and his ravenous appetite could not be satiated. He never gained weight.
Ooh, that's interesting.
His abdomen became distended with each large meal. And he toured the French countryside, performing for anyone who would stop and watch as he gorged himself. So literally, like, they would give him things to eat, and he would eat them for show.
Well, I mean, they didn't have a lot going on back then.
Well, it wasn't like, what do you want to do? You want to go to the mall? You maybe want to go to the movies? No, yeah. Let's just go to the side of the road over here and watch this guy eat a pocket watch. You know, like, it just...
Maybe he had a thyroid condition.
Maybe. Yeah, I found a Reddit thread that they were going through all of this fucking shit that it could possibly be. And I had to stop reading because it was just a rabbit hole. I was just falling. But yeah, so he would eat large amounts of food and literally anything else that anyone would ask him to ingest. And items range from, like I said, pocket watches... to cutlery and literally everything and anything in between.
That had to suck coming out.
Yeah, that's part of it.
Oh, God. That's
like I said, if you're squeamish,
that's
maybe stop. Maybe stop listening right here. Because Katie's thing would not make you squeamish, but mine is going to maybe make you squeamish if you're squeamish. If you're not squeamish, please continue to enjoy. So although we're aware that the competitive eaters of today go through strenuous exercises to expand and stretch their stomachs in order to take in more food,
mm-hmm.
the story of Terrar is still unnerving and ultimately very strange. And that's kind of the reason why I wanted to put him into the weird and wonderful category for hotheads, because mm-hmm. he deserves to be there. Terrar was certainly a medical anomaly. And he performed as what they knew then as a freak.
Yeah.
To support himself.
Very politically correct.
So, he was born in France, near Lyon, around 1772. His date of birth is unrecorded, and there's debate as to whether Terrar was his real name or a nickname.
Mm-hmm.
The word Terrar is actually, I believe it's derived from Latin for the word terror.
Ah, so that'd be kind of on the nose if it was a birth name.
Yeah, so, I don't think that that's actually his real name.
Or his parents, like, they saw into the future and they're like, you're gonna do some fucked up shit.
We need to let everyone know.
We need to let everyone know by naming you Terrar. So, Terrar lived with his parents until his early teens. And at this point, he found that he was eating... just ridiculous amounts of food every day. He was, like, literally eating his parents out of house and home because he would eat everything.
He would eat the house and home.
So, they couldn't manage to feed him, and he could eat his weight in meat every day. So his parents were like, you know what? Peace out, dude. You gotta hit the bricks, because we can't do this anymore. So they forced him to leave. And after this, he essentially toured the country with a group of sex workers and thieves. And he would beg for food.
Mm-hmm.
And he would steal food.
Fair.
So eventually he came upon a traveling charlatan who welcomed him into his show as basically a performer. Mm-hmm. So he had steady work. And the show that he produced was basically him eating everything, including, like, garbage and rocks and just, like, anything. He would even eat live animals, and he could consume whole basketfuls of apples, just one after another.
He must have been able to, like, really open to, like, pop he could his jaw.
Really, yeah, he could really pack it away. He essentially ate like a duck and, like, didn't chew.
Ew.
It just got swallowed.
That's just sad. Consumed. Like, you're missing on so much of the enjoyment of food in this case.
Well, yeah, but food for him is not about enjoyment. Food is about feeling satiated, which he never did.
Ah, true.
And performing so that he can get more food, so that he can feel satiated,
which he never did.
So, around 1778, his work as a street performer brought him to Paris. And in general, he had a successful career, and he drew fairly large crowds. People would stand around him and gawk and cheer until one of his acts went awry. And he had to be carried to the Hotel Dieu Hospital by members of the crowd.
Mm-hmm. What happened?
Because he had an intestinal obstruction.
Mm.
So, I mean, it's only a matter of time. Like, you eat enough, and it's something bad is going to happen. So, they gave him powerful laxatives, and he cleared out his entire system. They worked their magic, and then he was back in business. But not before he offered to swallow the surgeon's pocket watch and chain. And the surgeon, whose name was M. Giraud, said that if Terrar swallowed his belongings, he would cut him open himself and retrieve them. So, like, motherfucker, don't that touch my, like, pocket watch.
That's, like, the most punk rock answer.
You can do that, but that I'm gonna reach into you,
and
I'm gonna pull
cut
it
you
back
open
up.
And get. Yeah. Yeah. I can only think that he ran into somebody from, like, that TV show, The Sopranos. It was like Tony Soprano. You can eat my pocket watch, but then I'm gonna cut you open.
And I'm gonna take it back
I'm
out.
Take it back out. Yeah.
We have great accents.
That's totally what Italian people sound like. No. Terrible.
Yes.
Okay. We should probably take that part out. No, we'll leave it in. Whatever. Okay. So, Terrar's eating habits didn't affect his outward appearance at all. In fact, he was rather gaunt, and at the age of 17, he only weighed in at a mere 100 pounds.
How?
So he was a tiny little guy.
Ugh.
But he had this abdomen that would distend.
Mm-hmm.
It would, like, become this huge balloon.
Mm-hmm.
When he filled it with food.
Mm-hmm.
And then eventually he would have terrible diarrhea and have to, you know, whatever, and then he'd fill it up again. So it was literally just his entire life was eating.
Yeah.
And trying to feel full.
I feel like that would be more of a brain thing then.
It could have been.
Like, yeah, tumor
somewhere. So, his mouth is described as abnormally large, and his teeth were heavily stained, no doubt from consuming pure refuse.
Yeah.
And other inedible items for show.
Oh my god.
If he didn't eat, his skin would droop, and his cheeks would sag, the skin of his stomach would deflate like a burst balloon. And he could then take that skin and wrap it completely around his waist like a flabby belt. So, Terrar was essentially a combination of sideshow fame, the human skeleton, and the elastic man. So, he could do both.
Oh, my God.
She's just horrified.
I don't even have words right now. If you can see my face, you know. No.
In addition to these anomalies, Terrar is also described as having a terrible odor.
Well, duh.
That could be experienced from a distance of 40 paces. He always was sweating very heavily. And, of course, obviously, he was prone to terrible bouts of diarrhea because he had to get all this shit out of his system. Literally, sorry. But, I mean, yeah. I'm here all week. So he would belch loudly. He would constantly, he'd constantly be swallowing. I'm assuming that if you're constantly hungry, your saliva is constant. So he was just constantly swallowing. And his eyes would become bloodshot if he didn't eat.
Sounds like a real catch.
Indeed. So there's no mention of a wife. I wonder why. So according to Wikipedia, hyperthyroidism can induce an extreme appetite, rapid weight loss, profuse sweating, and heat intolerance. Bondison, 2006, speculates that Terrar had a damaged amygdala.
Yeah.
It's known that injuries to the amygdala in animals can induce polyphagia, which is what they thought he had.
That's where my brain went, you know, psych and all.
Yeah.
Like,
mm-hmm.
Screw up that part of the brain and
you go eat.
Oh, yeah.
You're going to always be eating.
I mean, there are people today that do that and can't. They have no idea when they're full.
I mean, it's on Grey's Anatomy, so.
It's got to be real. Yeah. If it's on Grey's Anatomy, no, it is legitimately.
Yeah, like, and an TDH, I love that show. But.
So when war broke out in 1792, Terrar enlisted in the French Revolutionary Army. Now, the FRA was known for three things. Its revolutionary fervor, its large numbers, and its poor equipment.
Mm-hmm.
So Terrar threw himself into a life of military service. But ultimately, the food rations they wouldn't satisfy him. And even though other soldiers would offer Terrar part of their ration in exchange for services, so like, can you polish my shoes? Can you stop going? It wasn't sexual in nature. You can smell him from 40 paces away. It wasn't sexual in nature. They were like, here, can you please take my fucking boots and shine them over there? Please, far, far away, and I'll give you these crackers? Like, shit.
Needed services for
it. Yeah, goods for services. It was a trade and barter system. Okay? So, this, you know, the working in order to get rations didn't work because ultimately that little amount of food didn't fill him up. So he took to eating refuse and scavenged through dung heaps for scraps.
As one does.
As one does. Eventually, Terrar was admitted to a military hospital because he was suffering from extreme exhaustion because he couldn't get enough food. He was granted quadruple rations by the hospital staff, but he still remained hungry, and he would forage in garbage cans and gutters. He would even leave his bed at night to steal away into the apothecary cabinet and eat the poultices.
Eat the what?
The poultices.
Oh!
Yeah, so like a poultice is like something that you would put on
a wound,
a burn, an open wound. Yeah. It has herbs and different oils and stuff in it. It's supposed to be for healing.
Yeah, medicinal.
Not supposed to be for consumption.
Definitely not.
Yeah, no.
That just sounds like such a sad life.
It sounds like a terrible life. So, Terrar was ordered to stay in the military hospital and undergo psychological and physical evaluations by Dr. Corvée, who was a surgeon to the 9th Hussar Regiment. And George Didier, Baron Percy, was the surgeon-in-chief of the hospital. And Corvée and Percy would watch as Terrar consumed literally everything that they put in front of him. In one instance, a meal was prepared to consist of two large meat pies, plates of grease and salt, 4 gallons of milk. Though the impressiveness of this particular consumed item depends on the definition of a gallon for the time period.
Yeah.
So, for example, from savoringthepast.net, in other recipes, the word gallon was used as a measurement. Now, this is a good example of how this has changed over the years. If you live in the United States, you expect a gallon to hold 128 ounces of liquid. It's a measure that was officially adopted in the early 19th century from the old wine or Queen Anne gallon. Its volume capacity precisely holds 231 cubic inches, but the term gallon in the 18th century was likely the ale gallon, which had the capacity of 277 and a quarter cubic inches, approximately 20% larger than the wine gallon. So essentially what they're saying here, in a roundabout way, is that the gallons differed. So yeah. It might actually be 1.75 liters as opposed to an entire gallon.
Yeah.
So maybe it wasn't quite that much.
Still a lot of milk.
I mean, regardless of how large the gallon might have been, that's still a fuck of a lot of dairy. I'm just saying. You talk about the... from all that fucking dairy. Ugh.
Oh my god.
Gross.
Yeah, it just... His life just must have sucked so much, man.
Yeah, it doesn't get any better.
Oh, well. Okay.
So Terrar was given given a variety of other items to consume purely for, I believe, the amusement of the doctors that were present.
Yeah, well, probably they're like, there's no way. For evaluative
purposes. Yeah, so they give him snakes, lizards, and puppies.
What?
It is said that Terrar also ate a cat alive, stripping the flesh from its bones and eating it whole.
What the fuck?
Yeah, and then he later vomited up the fur and skin like some sort of animal. So, yeah.
Ew.
When he was given an eel, he ate it whole after crushing the creature's head between his teeth. So, Percy writes of this scene, quote, "The dogs and cats fled in terror at his aspect, as if they had anticipated the kind of fate that he was preparing for them."
All I know is I definitely don't want secondhand anything he owned.
Right? Well, imagine how much fecal matter is on everything.
Oh, God.
I mean, God, you know, it wasn't like they were taking regular showers and whatever.
Oh, my God.
I'm sure it was terrible. He ate a puppy. So... it wasn't long before the military began asking for Terrar to be released and put back on active duty because he was supposed to be actively involved in the military.
Uh-huh.
He enrolled, and so they wanted him to serve. Percy had no choice but to allow his patient to leave because he could see absolutely no reason medically for Terrar to stay there. Dr. Corvée, however, approached General Alexander de Beauharnais and suggested that Terrar might be an asset to the war effort. Corvée placed a note inside of a wooden box and he instructed Terrar to eat it, and he did.
Mm-hmm.
And then 2 days later, when the box emerged in Terrar's excrement, the document was still legible. So Corvée told de Beauharnais that Terrar would make an excellent courier of sensitive documents, as enemy forces would find nothing if they searched him, and he could pass undetected through their checkpoints.
That's disgusting. Yeah.
And so... but
smart.
Right. So, Terrar became a spy. A spy that could only speak French, but a spy nonetheless. Let's just say that he was no James Bond. I think that I would have had reservations about swallowing a box containing sensitive military information... but I'm also not a professional glutton, so I don't know.
And you haven't eaten a puppy.
And I've never eaten a puppy, no. Also, Terrar was paid handsomely with a wheelbarrow full of 30 pounds of bull lungs, liver, and testicles as a reward. So it's not like he didn't get anything out of the deal.
Yeah, he got bull balls. Like, what else do you want?
Something tells me he did get diarrhea, but that's neither here nor there. Terrar was employed officially as a spy for the Army of the Rhine and was immediately sent on a covert operation. Terrar was ordered as his first assignment to carry a message to a French colonel imprisoned by the Prussians near Neustadt. He was told that the documents were of great military significance, but in reality, de Beauharnais had merely written a note asking the colonel to confirm that the message had been received. And if it had been received, to return a reply with any potentially useful information on the Prussian troop movements. So, So, Tarar made his way through Prussian lines in order to deliver and return the message, and dressed as a German peasant in order to blend into his surroundings. Now, remember how I said he wasn't James Bond?
Yeah.
Well, Tarar didn't speak a lick of German. So, of course, he began to arouse suspicion with the locals, who alerted Prussian authorities. Like, I just imagine him, like, shuffling through Germany, being like, Bratwurst, Schwetterling, Krankenwagen, German word for goodbye, like, yeah. Just fucking, yeah. So, he's arrested, almost immediately, but even after hours of whipping, he refuses to disclose his mission. This is something that I particularly admire about Tarar, because you would feel like, if they offered him food,
yeah,
he would just be like,
I'll tell you everything. And here's what's
going on.
Yeah.
Get out a pen. Like, he would tell them everything. But I guess they never offered him food, or he just, you know, they didn't know, so they didn't offer it to him. But no, he wouldn't give anything away of his mission. It wasn't until a full 24 hours later that he finally relented. Because I'm sure he was starving and like sick beyond imagining. And
being
whatever.
Tortured.
Of being tortured, yes. He was chained to a latrine, and eventually, 30 hours after being swallowed, the wooden box emerged. Zogli was furious when the documents, which Tarar had said contained vital intelligence, found, you know, it was only De Beauharnais' dummy message.
Yo, boy, you got this.
Right, yeah, yeah, hit me back, yo. So Tarar was taken to the gallows, and the noose was placed around his neck. Okay, so some believe that Tarar actually passed the box with the message, but then retrieved it from his stool and ate it again.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they think happened. So, that's a,
fun.
It's a thing that happened. So at the last minute, Zogli relents, and Tarar is taken down from the scaffold, given a severe beating, and he's released near the French lines. So at this point, Tarar is desperate to be free of military service. He will literally do anything to be free of military service.
Mm-hmm.
So he returns to Percy at the hospital. He begs Percy to find a cure for this relentless eating, and Percy concedes because he doesn't like to see the man suffering. So the doctor would try to feed Tarar large amounts of soft-boiled eggs, but this failed to suppress his appetite. If Tarar smelled bad before feeding him all of those eggs,
yeah. Oh.
I can't imagine.
Oh.
He must have had a wing all to himself, because, like, yeah. His neighbors were like, we are drowning in our own water from our eyes. Yeah. Like, please move us. Or
we
kill
can't.
Me. Please move us or kill me. One or the other, get me away from this guy who smells like eggs. Yeah. So Tarar would leave the hospital because he wasn't satiated, and he would rummage through the garbage outside of butcher shops. He would fight stray dogs for scraps in the gutters and rubbish heaps. Percy would catch Tarar drinking the blood of patients who were undergoing bloodletting, because bloodletting was totally a thing back then still.
Ow!
So he would drink blood. He would also creep into the mortuary at night and consume the parts of deceased patients.
Oh my god.
I was
feeling so bad for him, and now I'm just, like, less.
it gets, yeah. So, at this point, Percy's colleagues say, listen, dude, obviously this guy is mentally ill.
Yeah.
You need to do something. You need to immediately have him committed to an asylum.
Yeah.
Because obviously
he's
there's
fucking
something.
Fucking eating dead people.
There's something not right. But Percy refused to believe that he could not somehow help the man. It wasn't until a 14-month-old boy went missing that Percy had had enough and demanded that Tarar leave the hospital and never return.
He ate a boy?
We don't know. But something tells me that might have happened.
Well, if he can eat a puppy.
Yeah. Yeah. So, mm-hmm. Yep. Remember, if you're listening up until this point, I fucking warned you. You had a warning, like, how long, like, 30 minutes ago, you had a warning, so it's I did too, but we're like... here now. Yeah, Katie doesn't have a choice, but you do. Yeah. So you made your choice. This is it. Terrar leaves the hospital. 4 years later, in 1798, Percy receives a call from M. Tessier of Versailles Hospital, claiming that he has a patient in his care who is very ill. And the patient had asked that Percy be called. And then, of course, this patient is Terrar.
Mm-hmm.
So Percy visits Terrar, who was sure that he was suffering from what he believed was another intestinal blockage. Apparently, he had eaten a gold fork during one of his performances, and to the best of his knowledge, he had not yet passed said golden fork. So, he assumed that it was that. But one look at Terrar was all that Percy needed, because clearly the man was in the advanced stages of tuberculosis.
Oh.
And he was really not long for this world. He was really in bad shape.
What you get for eating a kid and a puppy?
Well, you know. So, Terrar passed away about a month later. His corpse rotted so quickly and gave off such a stench that the doctors at the hospital refused to go anywhere near it. Tessier, however, dissected the remains because he still had a fork to find.
Well, yeah, and, like, what the fuck was this man?
And what the fuck, yeah. I'm sure that there was what the fuck and also where's the fork. both of those things.
WTF in many ways.
WTF, yes. What the fuck, where's the fork? So upon close examination, he found that he could open Terrar's mouth and see all the way down into his stomach.
Ew!
Because his, yeah, he was, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Literally see all the way down into his stomach. Additionally, his body was filled with pus and his liver and gallbladder were enlarged. His stomach was enormous and covered in ulcers. But Tesler could not find the fork inside Terrar.
Stuck on the pus.
You're still stuck on the pus. You don't give a fuck about the fork. You're not like, what the fork?
I mean, I care, but also if you're like having tuberculosis, it's possible that you shit out a fork and just didn't realize it.
Yeah.
But it was made of gold, so.
Well, I mean, but he was prone to unbelievable bouts of diarrhea, so I can't imagine that he was like, did I pass everything that I ate today?
Yeah.
I can't imagine that.
Maybe though he. Maybe he's so good at it that he can just tell, oh, that was a fork.
Maybe. I don't know. He's like, I've shat many forks in my life.
Many a fork has passed through my colon in my day.
Oh, man. It's just so... This is so terrible. I don't... Yeah.
You brought it up, man.
I know I brought it up. I feel you like he deserves to be added to the weird shit that...
I agree.
Yeah.
Still not over the puppy.
So, the story of Terrar the Glutton seems too fantastical to be believed.
Mm-hmm.
But there is evidence of another such individual capable of such grand consumption. His name was Charles Domery. He was born in Poland in 1778, joined the Prussian army when he was young, but was very dissatisfied with the rations, so he went over to the French army for the food. once he went through all of the French's food, he turned to cats. Reportedly, Domery ate 174 cats in a single year. Other unimaginable feats include eating 5 pounds of grass a day.
I mean, that's sustainable, at least.
And attempting to eat the severed leg of a fellow soldier.
Oh.
Domery's incredible eating abilities was due to a medical condition called polyphagia,
mm-hmm.
which involves excessive appetite. One time, the British Army gave him the following items, so there's like a little list, just to see if he could eat them. So they gave him 10 pounds of meat. They gave him multiple bottles of wine. A raw cow's udder, and 2 pounds of candles. Now, once they've given him the cow's udder, do you think that they were like, well, what the fuck else do we have to feed him? I don't know. What do you have? I don't have anything left. Wait, there's like 2 pounds of candles over there in the corner. Just grab those. Why not? What? I mean, literally, why not? Oh my god. So, anyway, my resounding question is, were Terrar and Domari the same?
Ooh.
Or will we ever know?
Ooh.
Because there's no... His birth date, his date of birth is all fucked up.
Mm-hmm.
So it could entirely be possible that the date of birth is just screwed up and the Terrar same. That they're talking about is actually...
Yeah.
This guy. It's entirely possible.
It is entirely possible.
And actually, it's actually really nice with this other guy because at least you know that he has a date of birth, he has a date of death.
Yeah.
I mean, there's probably military service records out there that prove that he served. But yeah, fucking candles. I just can't. It's literally like, we don't have anything else to feed him. He ate all the food already.
You just like look around.
What
like...
Well, I mean, grass, but that's not impressive.
Candles.
What else is there to eat?
I'm just like, did he like chew them, do you think? Or do you think he just like...
I bet he just swallowed them whole. I bet he swallowed the bottles of fucking wine whole. I bet he didn't drink the wine.
He just laid down the fucking bottle.
He ate the fucking bottles.
Yeah, just make sure he like put it in like upside down that way, like it would drain as it went down.
Right? Like Yeah, I bet he downed that shit like cork and all. He was like, fuck it.
Yeah, like I've got nothing and to lose just, here. Oh god.
Wowzers.
Yeah. Well,
so that was the thing that I talked about.
It was.
And now then... we can never talk about it again.
Yes. It has been banished to the room of silence.
Oh my god. Yeah.
Oh, well, this was definitely an interesting one. I think we covered some good shit.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a little bit of a longer episode, but, you know, I mean, it's the first episode of the season.
We missed you guys. We had a lot to say.
Yeah. So, you know, I think we started off the season on the right foot.
Yeah. Not the one that the guy tried to eat, the other foot.
Yeah. Our feet, yes. Not the feet. Yeah. Oh, god. Okay. Anyway, we banished it to the room of silence, remember? So now we don't ever talk about it again. The terror that is Terrar. Yeah.
Ba-dum-ps.
Okay.
All right. Is that it for this week?
I think that is.
I think we're good.
I agree.
Yeah,
hit us up with any suggestions for names, and don't forget to subscribe and give us a 5-star review. Mm-hmm. We really, really appreciate it.
Yep. Shoot us an email with topics that you maybe want us to cover. Obviously, there is no topic too strange for me.
Yeah, and I'll do my best.
Katie's like, I don't know that I'm going to go this far. That might be a bridge too far for me.
Well,
but
I mean, I'll react, but we'll have to divvy them up based on can I handle researching this?
Yeah,
because I can research a lot of stuff. Like,
yeah,
but I don't know. There was
a lot of head holding.
Yeah,
this time around, and a lot of an incredulity.
Yeah.
On your part, so maybe not.
Well, we'll see. We'll see what happens. But hey, maybe you have like more witchy, haunty things that don't involve people who drink blood and eat corpse bits.
And poultices.
Yes, poultices. Yeah. We cannot forget the poultices.
A nice poultice salad.
Ooh, yes.
That's fantastic, yeah. Uh-huh. So, we will see you on the flip side. Thank you for listening.
Hang cool, teddy bear.
And as always, guys, stay spooky.
$20 gold piece on my watch chain. So the boys will know that I died standing pat. I went down to St. James Infirmary. You know, I saw my baby there. Oh, she was stretched out on that long table.